There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's talk to Washington, D.C., where Kate Fisher is standing by. Kate, good to have you back on.
Hello.
So can we start? I mean, the stories are clearly President Trump, Kim Jong-un centric at the moment, but the summit is about to happen. It really is the center of, I suppose, the international news world. But your perspective from Washington, D.C. is interesting.
Yeah, that's right. We are all watching it eagerly here. It's unusual for the president to be this far away physically from Washington. He doesn't usually like to travel that much, and he is literally on the other side of the world. Everybody here very keen to know what is going to happen. I think the only consensus is that nobody knows, because both of these men are so unpredictable that you can analyze and predict and look at things as much as you like, but actually, until they get together, it's really hard to know. And interestingly, usually in this kind of international meeting, this big summit situation, there will have been weeks and weeks of work between advisors on both sides kind of trying to thrash out some kind of plan, some kind of pre-deal, if you like, that the two leaders can look at and discuss. But there really hasn't been that much time to do that. So this will be interesting in that really it's going to be so reliant on the two personalities involved. And also unusually, the two men are going to meet one-on-one without any of their advisors in the room initially, which again, it's very unusual. Usually, world leaders are flanked by, you know, aides and lawyers and their close chiefs of staff, etc. But the two men are going to meet solo, I guess, a translator or two. But they are just going to meet one-on-one, again, meaning that it is so hard to predict what is actually going to happen in that room because these two men are so unpredictable. So lots and lots of interest here about what is happening there. And I think Washington is really empty. All the journalists have got on a plane to Singapore and lots of the analysts as well. That meeting to start on Tuesday, the world is watching.
Well, it is. I mean, it's fascinating this. We heard from Simon Marks, your colleague at FSN, on the news on Dubai Eye just now. Simon is, of course, there. What do we know about the agenda at all? Do we know anything of the agenda, what President Trump may have on the list and what Kim Jong-un may have on the list? Or is that purely speculative?
No, we do. There have been some kind of words from each side ahead of the meeting. The US, for its part, is saying that it will offer North Korea unique security assurances in return for denuclearization. They are still insisting that they will accept nothing less than a complete denuclearization of the peninsula. North Korea, for its part, unusually, its state media is talking about this. Usually, they wait until after an event before they talk about what is happening, but they are telling their people about this meeting in advance, and they are saying that they are looking forward to a new relationship with the United States. In the past, North Korea has called, in polite terms, America the enemy, evil, much, much harsher language than that. They have told their people that America is the worst thing in the world for the North Koreans. And now they're saying, you know, this is a new era. There is a new relationship on the horizon. So we don't actually know what, if anything, Kim Jong-un is willing to give up in return. But the U.S. is saying that they will assure the North Koreans that their security is assured, but they do want to see complete denuclearization. There are lots of people who say that the North Koreans will not be prepared to do that, but perhaps Donald Trump himself is saying that this is kind of a beginning, an initial meeting, a get-to-know-you session, if you like. So I don't think they're expecting necessarily that kind of a done deal within the first few hours of meeting, but certainly I think it's the change in tone of both sides that is really different about this. The US and North Korea have been sworn enemies for years, so this is just a very a new and different experiment, if you like. But the US is saying they will not accept anything less than denuclearization.
And Kate, if we can stay with US President Donald Trump, in what's becoming a regular occurrence, he's fired off a string of angry tweets. And he's criticised some of allies that would be deemed as quite close to America. And this is just hours after leaving the G7 summit in Canada.
Yeah, this is a real juxtaposition, isn't it? Here you have an American president angrily kind of criticising America's closest allies who have stood by America for years and years and years and fought alongside each other in wars. And he is saving all his complimentary words for Kim Jong-un, who is a brutal dictator. So there is a lot of people suggesting that this is a very different kind of diplomacy than we have seen in the past from American presidents. But yes, he left the G7 summit, a traditional kind of meeting amongst Western world leaders, in something of under a cloud, having refused to sign the communique at the end of the meeting, which all the other leaders had signed. He signed it initially, agreeing to all the terms, and then he heard a press conference given by Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who said how angry he was about tariffs that the US were going to impose on steel and aluminium from Canada. And that the President Trump tweeted and said he heard that and he decided to rescind his signature from the communique, which then led to Angela Merkel of Germany and Macron of France, President Macron, criticizing Donald Trump and saying that this wasn't the way that things were done. And that then led to this tweet storm that you referred to about Donald Trump just ranting, basically, about how much money America gives to NATO and how Europe needs to step up and pay more, calling the Prime Minister of Canada dishonest and weak, saying that the European countries pay only a fraction of the cost of NATO and then they laugh at us. They need to pay more, going on and on. He was saying that the US is unfairly clobbered on trade despite protecting Europe as a great financial loss to themselves, and he tweeted, "Change is coming." So this was, you know, a very unusual spat against all America's closest allies, and it has worried analysts here about the damage that it could be doing to those very important alliances.
It's an interesting word, clobbered, as well. I haven't heard that for years.
Yeah, no. He used it.
It's a fantastic word. We should resurrect that one. Another story you're following, Kate, and I've only really seen the headlines of this. I haven't looked at the speed or exactly how all the peripheral bits work together, but the US has debuted the world's fastest supercomputer.
Yes, and I will probably get, or you may get, some computer buffs telling me that I've mispronounced this. But it's Summit, it's called. It's the US's new supercomputer. It's twice as powerful as the current world leader, which is a Chinese computer. Now, that computer, the Chinese one, has a processing power of 93 petaflops. I think it's petaflops. It could be petaflops. I'm not sure. Someone brainier than me would know. The machine, but this new machine can process 200,000 trillion calculations per second, or 200 petaflops. So it is over doubly as powerful as that Chinese one. And its initial uses will be in astrophysics, cancer research, and systems biology. It's housed in Tennessee in the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, and it's been funded in partnership with IBM and NVIDIA. Kind of got tens of thousands of processors designed to carry out these specialized calculation-intensive tasks. So it really could bring, you know, some more information to people studying these forms, the things like cancer research, where they need complicated calculations doing quickly. So, yeah, very exciting for those who are interested in these computers and scientists looking for some help in their research.
And finally, Kate, this story is quite quirky, to say the very least.
Yes.
There's people employed basically to tape together pieces of paper when the president's got a bit confused, annoyed, angry, rips them up, and they need to preserve these documents. So their job is to put the pieces back together.
That's right. So there is something called the Presidential Records Act here in the US, which means that the White House has to preserve all its memos, letters, emails, any paper that the president touches, and then they are all sent to the National Archives for safekeeping because they are historical national records. So there is an office, a government office that, you know, kind of orders these, classifies them, sends them to the National Archives. That is what they used to do under all the previous presidents. It was kind of like a classification job. However, this president has a habit of ripping up bits of paper after he has read them or has finished with them. He apparently is something he's always done, and as much as aides have told him that he mustn't, because these are historical documents that under law must be kept safe, he still keeps ripping them up. So these people who had until this point had a kind of normal government job where they did normal government things, you know, they're paid $60,000 a year, it's a good job, they are now having to stick together these bits of paper they are handed with bits of sellotape, essentially. Some of them are just ripped in half, but apparently some of them are ripped into tiny, tiny bits of paper, and they have to, a bit like a jigsaw puzzle, find the right bits, stick them all back together with sellotape, and then send them through to the National Archives. So I can only imagine that in the National Archives there are these reams and reams of beautifully preserved pieces of paper, and then this kind of slightly more ripped up area of paper. And yeah, these men, this is their, has been their job for the last few months, is just more than the last few months, the last year or so, just literally sticking bits of paper back together, because it is illegal to not keep this, these records. They have to preserve them.
And Kate, I don't know if you know the answer to this. You may or you may not. But I mean, is it everything he writes down? So even if he's, you know, even if he's sat there going, Melania, just nipped out, we're out of milk. Let me know if you need anything else from the shops. Do you think we need to keep that?
Yeah, well, from what I have read, it is anything that he, if he wrote that sitting at his desk at the Oval Office, then yes, I think maybe it is supposed to be. Certainly, I read that things like notes he made when he's giving speeches, any memo, maybe he's writing a speech and hands a memo to a member of staff, he needs something, then yes, that's all supposed to be kept safely, yeah.
I'm definitely hoping it's the mundane domestic stuff too.
I know, that will be fast. In fact, it's now made me think, oh, I quite like to go and look at the National Archives now. Maybe there's something exciting in there.
Oh, we've started something here we just can't finish. But it is right. I mean, it is. The president gets lots of newspaper clippings every day. And if you put a note on the newspaper clippings, it includes that as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If he scribbles on if he scribbles annotations on anything, yeah. And I guess if he, you know, has an idea on the back of a cigarette packet, as they used to say, then that has to be saved as well.
Well, there you go. So no chucking away the envelopes, no chucking away anything in the White House. Kate Fisher is based in Washington, D.C. Always good to talk to you, Kate. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.